23andMe says I should take off my clothes, so I'm going to get naked now.
So all three of us on the show today have the hockey puck, the Amazon Dot.
Yes.
I also have Lady in the full tube in the rig at home, but we all have dots.
Which tube? Because there's the
standard Echo.
Okay. Okay.
Just the OG.
All right.
The classic tube.
Yeah. Because we wanted a Bluetooth speaker in the RV, so that way we could listen to podcasts and music. Not as good as everybody says it was. The speaker in the tube. It's not really. I would actually, in retrospect, recommend getting a Dot and then just hooking it up to nicer speakers.
Yeah,
that would be a better way to go.
I actually picked up a $25 Anker Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah, yep.
And that sounds better than the built-in anyway.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So I have been sort of for the last few months pretty deep dived into automating the studio and my RV with the Amazon Echo, using the different various things that, you know, you can plug into it and whatnot. And I liked it quite a bit. And in fact, I really have zero complaints with it here at the studio. It's really just phenomenal when you have reliable internet connection. But therein lies the problem. Reliable internet connectivity, which I do not have in the RV. It was very evident on our trip to Montana, but also just with the crappy AT&T connection that I have.
But Chris, I thought you were a free digital nomad that can just go to where the internet is.
Well, that was actually 100% true until those bastards at AT&T started throttling based on network congestion.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't matter how strong my signal is, I still get screwed.
Yeah, but now you can be a thief that just travels from people's house to different people's houses and steals their Wi-Fi.
I can jack Wi-Fi, yeah. Actually, you know, my solution has been, get ready for it, big shocker, see if I can't localize it. And so to keep the automation traffic on the land. I know, if Noah were here, right? So I've been experimenting with different ways to do this.
I would say the easiest way is probably to reverse engineer Alexa and set up a local server and forward all the traffic to that.
Yeah, really, probably is, actually. Probably, honestly, because let me tell you about the path I have gone down. So first I tried Home Assistant, which I interviewed the founder of that project several weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
Really great project. And if I had more time, I would absolutely go this. I would go Home Assistant. So if you want a total under your control, land-based approach, check out Home Assistant. Now, that's not the route I'm going because I have a multifamily situation to deal with. I have multiple occupancies to deal with, the RV and the studio. And I want to integrate a few things that are...
already in place.
Yeah, exactly. And so, what do you suppose, Mr. Nunes, what do you suppose I've landed on? I almost am afraid to admit it, but I'll explain my rationale in a moment.
You're switching to Google Home.
Nope. Because that has the same internet dependency.
That's
problem.
True. That's right.
Is it something Apple-based?
Yeah, it is.
Oh.
Now, let me tell you why. It's HomeKit. So HomeKit has – what pushed HomeKit over the edge for me was –
is your love for Apple.
Yeah. HomeBridge is a Node.js-based open-source project that is – you guys, this is just a phenomenal project. So it takes – everything under the sun that has any kind of automation at all and allows it to connect to HomeKit. It's a total open source, like, home run kind of project. Like, one of these projects where some guy starts it to scratch an itch and then the open source community explodes around it. There are hundreds of plugins that integrate everything from every device I have all the way to Teslas. You can integrate Teslas in with HomeKit. Anyways, the nice thing about it, HomeKit, though, it's all based over the LAN, directly from device to device. No internet connection required.
Oh.
So you combine it with this open source project, which runs brilliantly on a Raspberry Pi 3 Model B. You get an image for it, you throw HomeBridge on there, and then using Yarn, which is an NPM tool, it's yarn add HomeBridge-HS100, yarn add HomeBridge-Hue, yarn add HomeBridge-Harmony. And it installs plugins for all of the TP-Links, for all the Hughes lights, for the Harmony controllers, like boom, 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 using its package manager. And then the iPhone or whatever iPad or whatever device you're using to manage HomeKit, just you go up to it. It discovers the bridge on the LAN. You scan one code with your phone or iPad. Everything's linked up. It's all locally encrypted. It's all going over the LAN. You can control all your devices. And it's so fast that as my finger is pressing down on the glass, the remote device is already responding to the command. I mean, it's
wow.
Like the Echo is fast, But it's not land fast. It is so neat, especially when you're out in the middle of nowhere and you don't have any internet connectivity, but you can still trigger these things off. Love it.
I got to say, I am very impressed by the fact that I think you managed to probably anger the audience of every show with one choice. Because Lup and Last, they're going to hate it because it's Apple. And then Coder's going to hate it because it's Node.js.
Right.
And Unfiltered's going to hate it because privacy. And TechSnap's going to hate it because of IoT.
Right.
But the BSC Now guys will love it because they're all secretly Apple users anyway.
Well, I'll tell you, it's to me, it's the most – if you're looking at a system that average consumers can deploy and then your family can use, like if you need other people using it, it seems to be – it's encrypted. It's device to device. And there is this massive open source community that's just everything you could possibly imagine works for Homebridge.
It's almost like Apple puts a thought into, you know, ease of use for users.
Well, I think what Apple is decent at is building platforms. So they'll build HomeKit or HealthKit or ARKit, and they get lucky and developers are like, well, that does a lot of the hard, heavy work for me. So then I just create this app around it and I can go sell it for $5.
Well, I don't think it's that they get lucky. I think it's that they see that they have like a billion users. So
yeah, HomeKit's definitely taken off slow. In fact, when I originally looked at the Echo, I thought, well, this really seems to be the way to go. The ecosystem is huge. Everything's advertising with Echo support. It wasn't until I started looking into Home Assistant and the open source community around automation. It really is pretty nice. One of the things that we have set up right now is you can have temperature sensors. This is just really basic. But when it goes below 55 degrees, we have a heater that comes on. And then when it goes above 65 degrees, the heater turns off, which is really nice because where we're parked right now, we have very limited power. So it's nice to, you know. Or the other one is because it's HomeKit based and iPhone or iPad or whatever you're using knows your location. You can also have it set so we have decoration lights, like just hanging lights in our mm-hmm. RV. And I can have them automatically turn off when all of the family members leave the RV. So we don't just sit there running this limited power that we have. That's just, you know, super stupid nice stuff. And I don't really need to be telling Amazon or Google when I'm coming and going from my home. And the HomeKit stuff is all based on the phone. It does when the iPhone knows you're at that location. It's not iCloud that's triggering things to turn on and off. It's the iPhone that does it mm-hmm. directly based on your location. So it's not like they're not keeping track of all of that.
It's like an easier version of those people that keep those NFC credit cards in their wallets.
Yeah, and it's nice because I have several things now. I have a Nest security camera and a Ring camera. I have several other things that come on when no one is home that is generated by this event system.
You know, I got to say, the thing that I hate most about these technologies isn't any of the technology. It's the fact that they're all named so similarly.
Yeah. Well, what I hate about it is that they're generally poorly updated and used for data mining.
Yeah.
So one of the things in the we'll get off this. I know not everybody cares, but I actually think this stuff matters. And once you try it, you realize it does matter. But that's another soapbox. With the Echo setup and a lot of other ones, you have to go into the individual apps to update their firmwares and to change their settings. So you have to like launch the TP-Link or the Casa app, and you have to launch the Wemo app for Belkin, and you have to launch the LifeFix app for LifeFix, and you have to launch the Hues app for the Hue light bulbs. These are just the ones right off the top of my head, right? But
it's true. Yeah.
There's a common firmware update API for HomeKit devices. So when you go into the HomeKit app, it tells you if any of your devices need firmware updates, and you can tell them to update from within the one app. So in one place, you see all that stuff.
I guess what I want to know is what's going to really set them apart as far as, I mean, yeah, you're speaking on a very high level on a level where most people are not going to be at. You know, they're not going to be looking for a solution that they can communicate over LAN and not have worry
about.
You
know who is, though?
Who is?
Builders. People that want to build, quote-unquote, smart homes.
Yeah.
You don't sell a house with a DSL line. So you can't have an owner walk in and have an Echo. You can't sell a house with an Echo, and you can't automate the shades and the curtains and the sprinklers. HomeKit has APIs for all of that, and so one of the things I saw when I was doing a lot of research on this is more and more builders, they're just They're just building a freaking iPad. I'm not condoning any of this. I'm just saying what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're just building an iPad into the wall. And they're saying, this is your HomeKit controller. They don't even call it an iPad. They just say, this is your home automation controller. They have their own, usually their own builder branded app that is talking to HomeKit.
Until it gets hacked by Russia or the kid out front.
Yeah.
And then you can't even like turn off your TV.
I don't know what they're doing. I think in some cases they're doing like separate networks and stuff. But yeah, I mean, that's the go-to easy argument. But the reality is there is more and more people that are doing this. So I think it's worth figuring out how to do it right. Because it's sort of like arguing against the coming tide, right? The tide's coming. There's nothing you can do to keep the tide out. It's going to come in. And so that's same with IoT and home automation. I've been looking into like Home Assistant and the Echo and now HomeKit. And out of the three different approaches, HomeKit seems to be the best compromises and combination of security, automation, and family use, because you can easily invite other members of your family to then just get a dashboard to manage the lights and the switches that they need, and it's location aware, so I can have a different board show up when I'm at the studio versus when I'm at the RV versus Angela's house. So it's I think very competitive, especially when you combine the fact that the Echo is location dumb. It doesn't have any idea of your location. So Chase,
yeah,
am I crazy? Because I feel like I got to stop talking about this because nobody cares about home automation. Are you doing any home automation? Are you doing?
I am the very, very low level, I guess you would call it, because I pulled the trigger on the hockey puck. I have to say hockey puck because I'm sitting right next to one.
And yeah,
if I say Echo. And if I say the magic word, yep, things happen.
Oh, yeah.
However, I picked up one of those and a couple of LifeX bulbs. They were
there you go.
On sale.
That's a great setup.
And one thing at night, I also have a sleep machine, a sound machine that creates white noise that helps block out the outside world for me when I'm on my holodeck. And one thing that always – it's not a lazy factor, but it's improved my life, and here's how. You ever go and you get in bed, you know, you turn off the light and you get everything together and you're comfy in bed, and then you forgot to do something like
– oh, yeah.
You forgot to turn off the light, or you forgot to turn on that fan, or you forgot to do something. Now I can just say, hey, blah – turn on the sleep machine, and it will just do it, or mm-hmm. turn on the lights. And then with IFT, I can have my lights automatically come on and you know, fade in when I wake up in the morning.
Yep.
So it's a life changer for me in those ways. Am I a little concerned that, you know, maybe Amazon wants to take my voice and share it with developers so they can improve upon those apps? Possibly. But I think this is the next step. You know, we dreamed when we were kids of the Star Trek universe where we could talk to the computer and have things happen. We're starting that process now. And yeah. I think that's really, really cool and magical.
Yeah. I think what I wonder, if we fast forward 3 or 4 years down the road, the Google Assistant and Siri have a couple of strong competitive advantages over the Echo. And to me, to my mind, they're, number one being you always have them on you.
Right.
And they can improve ways that you wake them and whatnot. So you always have the devices with you. So when you're in your car, when you're at the grocery store, you don't have an Echo with you.
Well, you could have like a pin that you put on your
yeah.
shirt
and
that you would touch.
There are apps.
Yeah.
but you do have a phone or a watch with you.
Well, are you saying that you don't have your Amazon Fire phone with you?
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Hey, don't knock that phone. That's a great phone.
And then the other thing, like I already said, is location. You know, so they are able to do, for me, huge feature is location-based reminders.
Yeah.
Location. That's why, for me, Assistant and Siri are better than the Echo in those regards. And I think long-term, they probably might be the winning feature.
I almost picked up a Google Home when I was at 99, but I wish Google would come out with like a – this is where Amazon is winning right now. They are so winning. They have a $35. They have a low entry point
yep.
where someone can mess around with.
Yep.
Google needs that.
Yeah.
Apple needs that. The Apple's trying to do that on the premium side. They're trying to make this like Sonos thing.
Were you skeptical when you bought it? Because I bought it because it was on sale because I was skeptical. Because I didn't buy it for like, what, 2 years or whatever? But I kept hearing from more and more people in the audience are like, yeah, after I got it, I really liked it.
Not skeptical, but I just kind of wanted to see what it could do.
Yeah.
And now where I'm kind of hooked into it, I do the comparison, for example, when I talk to Google and I talk to Amazon's device, the same question. And I feel that Google is like more human-ish. where I could
say,
have
a lot of those knowledge cards too.
Yeah,
that people can call upon,
and you know, say, hey, you know, tell me about blah blah blah, and it will, and I'll ask the Amazon device, I'm sorry, I can't do that, and then just that's it, you're done, you know. So there's some pluses and minuses of both sides, and, but that the cool thing is with everything being integrated with each other, you can try all these different providers.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I maintain it's a worthwhile thing to try, even if it's not necessarily for you, consider that it's going to be for a lot of people. Anyways, I'll wrap it up with this so that way we can move on. It fared better than I expected in my comparisons. Last.ting.com. That's where you go to support the show and get this. Get $25 towards a new device or your Ting monthly service. Ting's really simple. It's $6 for your line and then your usage on top of that. Easy peasy. No crazy contracts. No quote-unquote agreements. Just pay for what you use. Uncle Sam's cut. That's it. Each line is $6. So the average Ting bill works out to be about $23 per phone per month. Ting doesn't have any crazy like skins that they load on the phones or anything like that. So if you just want to go grab a phone directly from Ting, have at it, or bring a device. Check their BYOD page. They have a CDMA and GSM, both nationwide, that you can choose from. It's a really great system. Super simple to understand. Controls that are easy to use. You can see your usage at a glance. You can set alerts. It's like my favorite mobile dashboard ever. Check them out. Go to last.ting.com. And it's not just for mobile services, too. You can use them for appliances. Like Mr. Nunes over there uses it for his security system.
That's
a brilliant use. I have a Ting SIM and a tablet that gets like rare usage. But when I am out with the drone, it helps with assisted GPS tremendously. So I can do really fancy things like follow me with the drone. It's great use for the Ting SIM. It's just $6 for the line, and you can go pick up Ting SIMs either from Amazon or from Ting directly for basically nothing. In fact, sometimes they even have great sales. Last.ting.com.
See, I'm not sure if I want to go back to Apple. Like, with every edition of their updates of their phones and their you get a little bit better hardware, a little bit better camera.
It's pretty.
They're gonna integrate, but the thumb sensor.
You know, it's generally
gonna
do something better, but it's not necessarily gonna be too exciting.
Right, but the OS is just the same. Mm-hmm. Nothing's changed. Mm-hmm. I can't really fully customize it like I can on Android.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
That's where I'm kind of shocked by someone like you, who is just like, you know, I'm good. I'm gonna stick with my iPhone.
I think it's because I'm becoming an old person. To me, all that stuff Android, or all that stuff you just
hit that bell, old person.
All that stuff you just said is a con. To me, is a plus. I like that iOS has been consistent now, pretty much since iOS 7, and it's been consistently getting better, faster, and smaller.
You know, I deal with that right now, where I have Nexus 6P that is just randomly freezing, and I don't know why.
Yeah, we were talking about that.
And you know, I'll wipe the phone, and it'll still freeze.
Yeah,
but
my iPhone
is
as fast as it was the day I got it.
But I still won't go to iPhone because I like having the freedom and the ability to do whatever the hell I want to do with my phone.
So what's that? It's like file manager?
Oh, no. For example, do not disturb notifications where I can
super customize it.
I could super customize it where, say, you text me, Chris, and that comes through.
Yeah.
But I know they in iOS, no, it's like a phone call or nothing, you know, or it's like not granular.
Yeah, I could totally see that. That's why I don't like anybody that wants to use Android for like those reasons. I think makes sense to me. I would just, if it was me, I would either use it on a Nexus or a Pixel device.
Right.
That would be where I'd feel the safest using Android.
Yeah.
But you know, like there was a story I have it linked in the show notes from Ars Technica that there's a Broadcom flaw that's like at the chip level. And if you're on a current version of Android or iOS, you're fine. But if you're not on a semi-current version of Android, it's a chip level flaw that you can have exploited, I think, by connecting to either to Bluetooth or Wi-Fi network.
Wow.
It's the kind of thing where that's a rampant problem in Android. That creeps me out. Plus, Google's business motivations are constantly creeping me out. But I'm still using their services. Obviously, the Google Photos transition's been going well, but I'm still, I still use their services.
Yeah.
But to me, the consistency, just the stupid simpleness of that dumb Springboard launcher with those big stupid icons, and that insanely fast search to launch applications where I just pull down, type in one, two letters, and it can be the name of the app. It can be the category of the app. So if I installed it 3 months ago and I knew it was an app that helps me track Wi-Fi or cellular towers, I can start typing in LTE, and sure enough, that app comes up, and it's called like Antenna Tracker or something.
Right, yeah.
I typed in LTE.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of stuff is, for my dumb brain, is really top-notch. And then what I found, though, is once I kind of decided I'm just gonna use iOS until the next Pixel comes out. That was when Pixel 1 came out, and I was like, I'm gonna skip that, and I'm just gonna use an iPhone until the next Pixel comes out, and then I'll make my decision. Then I started using this stuff on there, and I'm like, it's really nice to have this and have it be private. Like, I know they could get access to it, but the fact that it's not their business model makes me I actually do like that. I enjoy that aspect of it. So you combine that with the reliability and stability of the OS, and the fact that when they announce new features. Like, this drives me crazy as an Android user. It drives me absolutely crazy. They'll be up on stage at Google I.O., and they'll announce some great new features, and I'm like, holy shit, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then nobody writes any apps for it. It never happens. It never ships. It might as well have not happened. Where every major big platform feature they launch on iOS, because all of the Apple users update so frequently, you actually see really good app shipping supporting that shit. Like, you actually get apps that use the features that they've been touting up on stage because people update the OS to get the new APIs.
Yeah, that's true.
So it just makes for a better consumer experience.
But at least Android doesn't restrict people if they want to go back to an older version of Android OS. Mm-hmm. But on Apple, if you update to the newest version, say on an iPhone 5S, for example, and you notice it's a little boggy because it's a little, you know, the operating system's a little too much for, you know, the older phone. You can't roll back to an old version. Apple, you know, pulled those signature, the certificates, if you will, from doing that. Those are the kind of things that bug me the hell out about Apple.
I feel like they're both evil in a way.
Yeah.
And so, like, with Apple, like that, like some stupid shit they just did. And of course, like, I understand they got to follow the laws in the countries in which they operate, but they just pulled all the VPN apps out of the Chinese App Store. So that way you can't bypass China censorship. Well, that's a real chicken shit maneuver.
Now, are they reaching into phones and pulling those killed apps? No.
No.
But they could. That's in the terms, right?
Yeah. Oh, and, you know, I actually don't know if Apple has, but I know Google has done that because of something that was malware. They've actually remotely uninstalled apps from people's phones. So, yeah, both are harsh dictators who different platforms make different concessions. I neither one is ideal. That's why I kind of wish there was a more successful open source alternative.
But I'm going to Ubuntu phone.
Yeah, what happened to that?
Yeah, it's no more. Well, I mean, there's a community project to keep it going.
Is this kind of same like the CyanogenMod mod community where they kind of imploded?
Well, Canonical decided it just wasn't a business priority for them anymore, so then an open source community stepped up to try to keep that code going. Since the code was always open source,
right?
It's just Canonical's not developing it anymore.
Womp yeah, womp. I think there's like three open source projects, and none of them have a whole lot of traction.
Yeah. It's a sad state of affairs. So I look at it and I've picked my evil. I pick the evil that decides to earn their revenue off hardware sales and not the evil that decides to earn their revenue off of monitoring me. And then I also find that the iPhone hardware tends to be fairly competitive. They still have just incredible CPUs in them. So
I'll never say I'll never go back because, you know, I started off as my first smartphone was an iPhone. It was an iPhone 3GS.
Yeah.
However, I need to see a new big change to iOS, and I feel like they just haven't done that yet. At least with
Android,
you're
just not the target user.
Maybe not. Maybe they're looking for the old geezer.
Yeah, old guys.
Yeah,
old guys are definitely a target for Apple.
That's right.
I think
young hipsters,
true.
Right?
Yeah, it's funny. I think they both ends of that spectrum: the young hipsters and the old guys. And
Chris falls into both.
Yeah.
I will. wow. Yay! I'll keep an eye out when the new Pixels come along, and I'm also keeping an eye out for anything interesting that will be compatible with Sailfish OS or something. I mean, I am not set in my ways. It's just like I have to pick an evil today, so that's the one I choose.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm kind of perplexed about what to do next about my Nexus 6P because I've already done factory wipes of it a couple times already, and I'm at a stage now where if I put a custom ROM on here, would it make things better or worse?
Mm-hmm.
Is this planned obsolescence? Is this something where this was intentional?
What would you say you've added to it over the years?
Nothing. I'm running stock, and the apps that I'm running are pretty. There's nothing weird, no weird apps, and I've wiped it, and I've reinstalled things. Like, it was, oh, on Friday, you know, there is something I can talk about. On Friday, I saw Dunkirk in the Boeing IMAX theater in Seattle Center, by the way.
Really?
Yes. By the way, the only true IMAX theater in the area. All these other places like at Alderwood and all these other... You ever heard of faux IMAX, fake IMAX?
Yeah, I know it's a thing.
It's a thing. Yeah. So IMAX created this new standard where if you have this minimum size screen, they consider it IMAX. If you have to have this thing. But it's not true IMAX. True IMAX is a three-story screen, okay? Yeah, yeah. And my God. So the Science Center, they completely remodeled the theater. They have brand new seats, a new screen, new projector, new audio, new everything.
Wow.
And Dunkirk is a Christopher Nolan movie about Dunkirk and World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So impactful, so full of sound and just feeling. You would feel the bullets as they were shooting and penetrating the boats. And, I mean, amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
On the technological side, I mean, just amazing.
Well, the movie's got a pretty good...
movie's pretty good, too.
Yeah, it's got 93% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. But I...
To make you, that makes it like worth going to the theater.
That's
was
the
it
thing.
Expensive?
Yes, but the money does go towards the Pacific Science Center.
Is it more than $50 bucks?
No, it's $18 per ticket.
That's not crazy.
No, not crazy.
I mean, that's not much more than what I pay for a local theater.
Yeah, that's like $12-15.
Yeah, yeah, and this money's going back into the nonprofit Science Center. But not only that, it's like I said, it's true IMAX. And they're going to have Star Wars there, you know, the Last Jedi next movie, and I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, no, those, yeah. But going back to my original question, on this phone, it's like, I don't know what to do. And I would love it if maybe somebody in the community has any ideas or maybe...
Like what ROM they're using.
If they're using a ROM at all, because I'm willing
different
to...
Different launcher, maybe?
Yeah, I'm willing to unlock. I'm willing to, like, I just want smooth performance because on Friday... I wasn't doing anything out of the realm of weirdness. I pulled the phone out of my pocket. Okay. I caught somebody behaving badly. I took a picture. Okay. And I wanted to tweet it out. My phone froze.
Yeah.
It just straight froze.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah. I missed out on this amazing moment when this huge deer walked up to me. Just this huge monstrous.
And said hi.
And the camera never would focus. It just stayed super blurred. And then the next like day or two after that, I missed my daughter's – I pictured my daughter's birthday. And after that, I was like, all right, I'm out. It just was so inconsistent. It was yeah. just – and that was an Nexus 6P.
Are you sure the flash memory isn't dying in it?
I guess –
That's an interesting
possible.
Idea.
Because yeah.
Can I test it?
I don't know.
Yeah, just run scan disk.
Yeah. Let me defrag it real quick.
Yeah,
okay.
There you go.
Just got to defrag my phone.
I guess you do actually kind of essentially do that when you format it.
Yeah, I would figure it rebuilds the mm-hmm. file tables and all that fun jazz.
Because Android is like a lot heavier on the flash memory than a lot of other things because it's constantly swapping all your apps out to disk.
Yeah.
I am more and then willing to do something. I'll do anything. To make it better at this
point. Buy a new phone.
Well, I'm holding off for either, probably the Pixel 2.
Yeah, you've seen some of the rumors, so you got to figure it's coming
or the new,
soon.
Or maybe the OnePlus 5. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I might switch back, I don't know, to them. I had them and had bad support.
Did we already have Google I.O.?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that means the next Google now. It's probably in like October.
Mr. Nunes over there has joined us again, and he is sitting right there in front of him is a Dell XPS 13 with MAUI 1706 Linux installed.
Yeah.
This is a follow-up to a review I did last week on the show. I reviewed Netrunner 1706. MAUI is split off from the Netrunner project. It's based on a stable LTS Ubuntu base. They've taken the Plasma desktop from the Neon project. They've put their spin on it, and that right there in front of you, Chase, is the first quote-unquote official release of MAUI Linux. What do you think?
So I have some pluses and minuses, first impressions.
I like this. This is the this is like the switcher's perspective.
Yeah. First thing I tried to do when you gave me the laptop was connect to Wi-Fi.
Yeah. I should have. This is my mistake. I should have connected it to Wi-Fi for you.
I
apologize.
Know. But it shows the frustration that I would have. Just to connect to Wi-Fi, I needed to enter in three different passwords. Like, I had to enter the Wi-Fi password. Then some sort of vault thing came up and said, "All right, you need to enter the password for that." And because
the wallet,
we're going to put your information into this wallet. I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. You know,
and it was dialogue, literally on top of dialogue too, which is never a great experience.
However, some of the interface is really nice and clean, and I like that a lot. I'm a kind of a germaphobe when it comes to interfaces. I want it clean and simple. However, when I hit the Windows key or what they would consider the menu key or whatever, super key. This interface is like it needs work.
I mean, that's like an overview interface,
right? And then when I click on that when I click on the widgets button, there's like a lag of like a couple seconds.
Yeah, because it's loading them all them widgets in there,
right?
All them fancy Plasma widgets.
But it takes advantage of the high DPI screen very well. You know, it's playing back video, no problems. You know, Flash is working great. I'm loving Flash.
Hashtag long live Flash.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, now you're a Flash lover. I love it. We should all become ironically Flash lovers. That'd be really fun.
Do you really think it's going to die? What is it, 2020, say, right?
Yeah.
Are we going to become Flash hipsters?
I wonder if there won't be like a huge surge behind some of these open source Flash projects like Ganache or something. So would you be comfortable using that? Would you be comfortable recommending that to somebody?
Definitely if everything that they needed was already kind of pre-set up and configured for. And that's where kind of a continuation when I was on the show last time, where you have somebody, right, say a grandma or grandpa, they just need basic internet access or whatever.
Yeah.
You get them set up, and they go to the store and buy a new printer.
Yeah.
And then you're like, crap, now you got to go find the Linux driver for it, and then you try to install it, and then just kind of like the same scenario that I ran into when I tried to switch. I tried to install Steam, and it was just doing these weird things, you know? Yeah. And so that's the big curve, I think.
So what's neat about this one is you get to play around with a curated Plasma desktop with an Ubuntu base. So it's essentially the same as the Netrunner I tried last week. Same kind of Plasma extensions and whatnot. Even includes a couple of Netrunner themes. Yeah, it's not bad.
I do like the drop-down terminal. That's really nice.
Yeah, isn't that?
I like that a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
I'll tell you, it's
not getting me to switch, though. It's not getting me to switch. But it's a good effort, so I'm glad I checked it out. So that was my quick take, and now that's Chase's first impressions of Maui. I essentially echo a lot of your sentiments. Essentially, some of the rough edges you ran into aren't Maui Linux itself, but are actually just the Plasma desktop. And that was your first time seeing that stuff. After the first couple of times you've seen those dialog boxes, you know what they are. It's not so bad. Like that wallet one. That's the one and only time it comes up because you have to create the first wallet password.
I see.
So that dialogue was saying, "Hey man, go through this wizard and try to create a wallet password." But here's where it went wrong, and I think where it threw you an extra error dialogue is you can do two types of wallets: one that is Blowfish encrypted and one that is GPG encrypted, which would be better. However, the required GPG libraries or whatever are not pre-installed on that system, but it's the default choice. So it chooses a default encryption method that it doesn't actually have the ability to do. So then it kicks out an additional error for you.
And I think that's my inherent worry on stuff like this, is where I'm trying something like this out, and I guess I'm expected to have a certain level of knowledge.
Like you have to know what Blowfish and GPG
right.
is. And how you enable those technologies on a Linux box.
And I'm be like, I can't even Google it because I can't even connect to the Wi-Fi to know what I'm looking at.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
Yeah. You know. But no, it's nice. I mean, it's very nice. I mean, I don't know how well the battery life is or anything
pretty
on
good.
It.
It's pretty good. I actually contribute a lot of that to Plasma, though. Plasma desktop has gotten pretty lean and mean, actually.
But I love the Dell XPS hardware. I mean, I love this footprint of laptop. This is great.
And that high DPI screen, when you turn up the DPI scaling in Plasma, which always takes me a bit to find, Future Chris, it's in the display settings area. Storing that. Once you turn that up, you change your mouse cursor to something that goes up to like a 48 DPI, and boom. It really looks great.
Yeah, it looks stellar.
As a side note, because somebody yelled at me over this, they officially call it a semi-rolling release, not a rolling release, because it's based on a stable base, but has the Neon stuff.
Ironically, the very issue that sort of propelled me into distro hopping itself may be mostly cleared up. The beard over here made a tweak or some sort of change. I actually don't know what it is yet. About, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
And we've had significantly less crashing.
I think it's actually twofold. I think first, we did an update that updated the NVIDIA drivers. And then secondly, I noticed that in OBS, if you have a scene that is trying to load a RTMP feed and it fails too many times, it locks up OBS. So I moved the one that we had on the reruns to a different
scene
or a different collection of scenes.
Okay. So that the change there and the update of the NVIDIA driver. So the update of the NVIDIA driver seems to resolve the GNOME 3 crashing, and the change of the RTMP scene collection seems to have fixed the OBS crashing.
Mm-hmm. And I assume that you've updated these machines because have you had any problems with...
I did the same driver update on these systems.
Yeah, but have you had any problems with the refresh rates anymore?
Not really, no. No, it's pretty much...
So all our problems are solved.
Yeah, I mean, I knew eventually it would come around, but it sort of raised the larger issue of we need these systems to be a little more static.
Well, now we just never update again. Yeah, static.
Right. Problem solved, right? Absolutely. So it's GNOME 3, I think, is probably we could keep it in production. But since we already sort of have momentum towards migrating to something that would be a little more reliable long term, we might just keep it going. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. That's the page to land on to support this show and sign up for a free 7-day trial over at a platform that's built by Linux enthusiasts for those that are hungry for Linux knowledge. It's a full featured training library with everything you need to learn new skills and advance your Linux career. And I really mean it. It's like the nitty-itty down at the bottom stuff that like is the basic skills that sometimes even a self-taught pros could actually go revisit. And then they have the stuff that's like all the way up the stack, stuff that runs on top of Linux, the big stuff. And then they wrap it all up with a platform that is built for Linux users. Self-paced, in-depth video courses on every freaking Linux cloud and DevOps topic. They have human beings that are ready to help you, full-time instructors. They have learning paths, which are a series of courses and content planned by their instructors for like a specific, bam, track.
Hey, Chris, can I suggest that maybe you go and look at some of their nuggets so you can learn how to pronounce some of the stuff that you always mispronounce?
Oh, those nuggets are nice little tiny bits of sparkly wisdom where you can get a single topic and just deep dive on it. You know, I log into there and I'm like, this is my challenge right now. I'm going to go take this on. In fact, I'm logged in right now. I'm looking at it. And my most recent course was I took a look at the AWS Certified Developer Associates level just because I was curious what it looks like.
AWS be cray.
Yeah, it is. It is. So it was interesting to just be able to like deep dive into that for a little bit. You can too. Just go to linuxacademy.com/unplugged.
So I decided, you know, I'm going to go watch my buddy over on Geek Gamer TV. Mm.
Thanks for the plug.
He is having a rough time, Chris. Like,
fuck. Fuck.
Really? It's bad, huh?
I hate it. All right.
You getting botted still?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not going to stop. I think someone has a personal vendetta against me. And
really?
I,
what did you do to
set somebody?
Intense.
He gets like a follower less than every minute.
What did you do to upset somebody?
I made a video about view botting.
Oh, and then of course.
So a few years ago, I did a Cut to the Chase video when I used to do these vlogs.
Cut to the Chase.
Yeah, Cut to the Chase. And I was talking about view botting. So I banned a person in my chat room.
Oh, got it. Isn't it funny? That's how you should have started the story. If you would have started the story with, well, I banned a guy, everything else clicks into place.
Well, I banned a guy a few years ago. And I think it started with this guy, and then I made a video about it because I wanted to kind of alert everybody what's going on about view botting, what's going on, what you should do about it. It's a scam.
Well, the answer is you don't do anything
about
it.
You can't do anything about it. However, being open does help, and you know, and telling your community, hey, this is what's going on. You know, I am not doing this. This is not intentional. This is just the way it is. This is what's happening.
Yeah.
However, that wasn't my problem last night, at least. It wasn't the botting part. Mm-hmm. I have a nice clean interface, so when people follow, they get a little mention on the screen, and, you know, and they get a little alert and a little sound effect.
Oh, yeah, that broke too.
That broke too. Because I was using third-party provider to pull this data, and for some reason it wasn't pulling subscriber data. Now, to me, subscribers are one of the most important people as a Twitch broadcaster because those are the people that decided to use their hard-earned money to support what you're doing. They believe in what you're doing.
Man, can we just decide? This is the last time I'll mention this every time we talk about Twitch, but man, fuck those guys for using Subscribe, which is the parlance for podcasts and YouTube channels. And those,
I know.
It's
yeah.
free in every other form.
Well, yeah, but well, fuck those guys for using that parlance when you bought magazines with a subscription.
That's right. And book subscriptions and right. magazine subscriptions.
Okay. All right.
Amazon subscriptions.
That's right. Okay. Amazon Subscribe.
Well, I guess it's all, we just need new words, guys.
I get my Soylent every month thanks to Amazon
Subscription. Well, are you still doing
Chris?
Soylent?
Yeah,
we Chris.
Are.
Oh, we got to talk about that next.
Yeah. Chris, how about you just bell me?
Yeah, okay. All right, so continue on.
All right. So subscribers, most important people, are outside of just people hanging out with you in general. I mean, I think everybody in the community is very important. However, subs are very, very important. So I had somebody that used their Amazon Prime. By the way, if you have an Amazon Prime subscription, and I'm not telling
me.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and mute his mic real quick. No, you got Rakai, you got myself, Twitch streamer. If you have an Amazon Prime account, you get one free sub per month.
It doesn't have to be either of us, just sub to someone.
I feel like this audience is probably not a big Twitch audience, though. You guys are barking at the wrong crowd, I think. But we'll see.
I don't know. I'm up to 15 subs.
Here, I will.
Wait, what was the number before you reveal the face? Was it 275 or something?
250.
Okay, continue on.
So one of the things I have on my screen is who is the last subscriber to the channel. And they get a permanent spot on the top of the page until the next person comes in. And it wasn't working. It said the last person was none. And that really bugged the hell out of me because the following part was working.
Are you sure that somebody wasn't trolling you and using the name none?
No, I checked that.
That's funny.
What I found out is I dug into it, and the provider that I was using, their tie-in to Twitch's API for subscribers was not working.
Oh, go figure. Microservices for the win.
Yeah, exactly. So I decided to offload from those providers and try to bring more of it in-house. And
so you wrote your own API?
That's what I was talking about programming last night. I was like, fucking hate programming. I hate it.
You're going to switch back once that breaks, trust me. I used to do that, and it actually will break on you.
I know it will.
This sounds like heartburn, guys.
It's first world problems, agreed. However, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, in doing the gaming thing for, 10, 11 years now, I want to try to show appreciation to the people who decide to support me. Kind of like the Patreon, where we try to support them.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's how you do it on that platform.
Oh, yeah.
So every day you guys hustling. That's what I say.
I am hustling.
All right. So tell me about Soylent. I got to know, are you 2 weeks in now?
Oh, I've been doing Soylent over a month plus.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Are you doing it once a day?
Once a day. So
are you replacing a meal with Soylent?
It's my breakfast.
Oh, good call.
So,
you have the poops the first week?
You know, I never got the poops.
Did you get the farts?
Occasional farts.
Yeah. Huh, not bad. So it was pretty smooth for you.
Yeah, pretty smooth. And thanks to Costco, I also have switched over to unsweetened tea.
Mm.
They have this really pure leaf tea. It's like $9 for a 15-pack. And I've pretty much eliminated 95% of my soda diet.
Damn.
Yes.
Are you seeing any results yet?
I've lost a few pounds.
Good for you.
Sure.
Good,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Absolutely.
I do that via starving myself. That's what I do.
That doesn't work.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I tried the Soylent thing. I tried it.
Now, which Soylent did you try?
Because
there's multiple flavors.
Just straight up like recent vanilla Soylent.
Here's what I want you to do. I want you to try it one more time, but I'm going to bring you a bottle.
He's going to have you try the coffee Soylent.
No. I'm going to have him try the cacao Soylent.
The what?
Cacao.
The chocolate Soylent.
Chocolate.
Oh. All right. Well, that would
be
more.
It's basically
appealing.
Chocolate milk Soylent.
You know, really. Yeah. You know what's really?
It's really good.
I tell you what works for me. I swear to God, I know it's crazy, but starving myself.
Yeah, but that's not good for your body.
We call it fasting. Actually, it's great for your body. If once you get past the hunger pangs, it's great for your body. It's great for your immune system. It's great for your body.
You know what else is good? Meth. Yeah, lots of crack too.
I'm glad Chris is joined. I'm glad Chris has joined a cult.
Hey, let me tell you something. What am I now? Two months into this, and I'm still
Beard,
on board.
Beard. He's all right. Let's say he's in the Apple cult.
He's in the
starving cult.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Because Apple doesn't feed him?
That's right.
I think I'm down like 4.5 pounds, and that's even after going to Montana.
Over what period of time?
Well, since I started checking a month ago.
All right, so your body's still adjusting.
Oh, yeah, there's water weight and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't do it all the time. What I found was after I fasted, I basically slowed down to the point where I really only need to eat once a day, or maybe like a small snack during the middle of the day, so like something light, and then I'll just go home and have dinner. And that's pretty much all I need to eat.
So why don't you just keep track of like your caloric intake, like using my fitness pal or something like that?
I was considering it. I think calorie counting's bogus. I think
it's
all
not.
That stuff's crap.
It's not.
All, here's what I tell you. I just follow how my body's feeling. And when I feel like I'm not feeling all that bloated and stuff, I'm feeling good.
You know, my body's feeling for a nice T-bone steak like right now. But,
well, there's,
you know.
there are cravings, and then there's like, so when I'm fasting, I'll be hungry. Like I'm hungry right now because I'm fasting right now. But there's a, like, you learn that there's like a, I really need to fucking eat. Like, this is no joke. I got to fucking eat. And then you learn there's like a, you know what I could do? I could eat right now. I could definitely go for a real nice burger. I could do that. I could eat right now. And when your mind's at, I could eat right now, you just keep fasting. And it's when you get to, boy, I really need to fucking eat. That's when you eat. And that's all. That's all I mean. I listen to that. I just listen to
you
those
need
signals.
To, you need to do the keto thing.
Keto. Yeah, well, that's if you combine that with fasting, it's a superpower because fasting actually puts your body into ketosis. That's part of what you're doing. And so once you fast for about 24 hours, you essentially go into early ketosis. And you can then just start eating keto from that point and stay ketotonic or whatever the...
Yeah.
Yeah, that keto stuff, you know, everybody says...
That's
this,
a cult.
People say it, but... I wonder, at what point do you do something not because you want to lose weight, but just because you feel better, you think better, and you sleep better? That's why I do it.
You know what I could go for? I could go for some more JB.
I hear you, man. Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. That's
nice.
A way to invest in the network and get more content. In fact, there's some exclusive content over there for those patrons.
Yeah.
The Beard joined me. For the Patreon exclusive,
and
podcast.
He shaved it off. I couldn't believe it. He
yeah.
shaved off
and on an audio show. So strange.
Yeah, I know.
You know what'd be crazy is if you know when I do reveal my face, I actually don't have a beard.
Yeah, that would be.
But I'm not gonna do that.
You did reveal some things.
I did.
We talked about some things. Actually, we talked quite a bit of things that probably the Jupiter Broadcasting's audience has been wondering.
Yeah, I think that show was about three times as long as we were expecting it was going to be.
Yeah,
but it's good.
It's perfect. It's about 45 minutes long, and it's an exclusive podcast just for our patrons, new and old. Well, we don't call you old. We call you vintage. We promise. Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. All right, gentlemen, let's do a little Ask Air. So we asked people to tweet us or telegram us with hashtag Ask Air and send their questions our way. And
yeah,
I picked out a couple.
Screw those guys. They have crappy questions. I don't want to do this.
Okay, so here's the first question. I thought I'd do a couple of generic ones. What is a word or phrase, guys, that instantly annoys you? This was a hashtag Ask Air. Hey, guys, what phrase instantly annoys you every time you hear it?
Libre.
Whoa!
So here's the thing.
Really?
No,
that
I'm
one? Oh. I mean, that one comes up a lot.
Yeah.
I think that might be coming up later in the show.
You know, the phrase that kind of been bugging me a lot lately is the phrase, you know, to tell you the truth.
Oh. You know which one I'm guilty of? We're all guilty. Actually, all of us on mic right now are guilty of this one.
Yeah.
In all fairness.
Yeah.
In all fairness.
To be honest with you.
Yeah, to be honest.
To be honestly.
Honestly,
yeah. To be honest, yeah. No.
Because that's always followed by, here's something that's going to make you sad.
You know, you know, I don't mean to interrupt, but.
Here's how you're wrong.
You know, no, I don't mean to interrupt for a guy, but.
I don't mean to interrupt, but then you interrupt.
You interrupt, yeah. Like, come on.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, these are all, you know, there's so many, like, go-to cruxes that we have in communication that are, like, meant to, like, bridge the gap.
Well, it's meant to placate someone while you're preparing to tell them how they are wrong about everything in the world.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, you ready for the next question?
Yes.
Okay, so hashtag Ask Air, or Air, not Error. Jeez, I always get that wrong. People
error.
Give me so much crap. It's Error, and
error.
I apologize. It's a bad habit.
Error.
Hashtag Ask Air, and this one's specifically at you, Beard. Hashtag Ask Air. Do you think it's reasonable to ask your partner to do something that you flat out refuse?
I mean, are they also refusing? If not, then no.
No, to ask them to do so. Its question is to ask them to do something that you refuse. So I thought about this one.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. So they're asking if I don't want to do something, if it's okay to ask my partner to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fine. As long as they're not also not wanting to do it, I don't see the problem with it.
Yeah, that's how
that's kind of one of the benefits of having a partner.
Yeah. Like if Hidea never wanted to dump the black tank, I'd be fine. I'd do it. I'd just get it done. What about you, Chase? Would you be willing to ask your wife something that you'd never be willing to do yourself?
No. I don't think so. I mean, you know, there are
it's
a
not
lot
fair.
No. I mean, there are a lot of things that I'll do that she won't do.
Yeah, that's what I was. You're right. Yeah, I do feel like it has to be like a pretty exceptional circumstance where there's something I would refuse to do, but then expect her to do it. That's
right.
Seems,
yeah, it's a little.
Yeah, yeah. I think this person's having a little relationship trouble based on that question.
It's not Axe Error. It's like Dear Abby.
Yeah,
you know?
this is a no judgment zone though. So
yeah, I guess there's nothing that I wouldn't do if they wouldn't do it. But if there's something I don't want to do and they're okay with doing it, yeah, sure.
Now, this is a short week. We're recording sort of close to the last episode, so that way we can get caught up.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not subscribed to User Error on RSS, you should be, because the release day may be changing and shifting a little bit.
Well, the difference is that we recorded 3 days ago and put it out, but this one, it'll still come out the same time next week.
I know. I'm just saying, while we're recording, there hasn't been a lot of time for questions.
Oh, yeah.
So we had those two, and then I have one to toss to the audience, and I wanted to be a discussion.
Okay.
So hashtag Ask Error feedback. So not only can you send us your other questions,
You're making this so complicated, Chris. The segment.
No.
We have two different directions of communication going on now.
No, hashtag Ask Error. It's the same word.
No. I mean, like, We're sending it out as Ask Error, and they're also bringing
it. We're just saying, like, so I'm saying reply with your answer and put the hashtag Ask Error so we can find it. So here's the question, and I would like their answers with hashtag Ask Error. What, if anything, should Jupiter Broadcasting or User Error do about Star Trek Discovery? That's what I would like to hear the audience.
Oh.
My thoughts are, I mean, see, I could do anything from it becomes a 5-minute segment on the show to nothing to a whole other podcast dedicated to it. Like,
it's all about the Orville, really.
Well, or maybe both, a show that covers both.
I don't think you can.
Oh, I don't know.
Can you combine two both of those?
I'm watching both.
I know. I'm going to be watching both, too.
Half and half. You make an A and a B side of the show. Or you compare and contrast.
In my mind, you go do your own separate show.
You're such a Star Trek hater. You're such a hater.
Wow.
What are you talking about?
I've watched all of it. No, I just want control of User and get you the hell out of here.
Okay. All right. I don't know. What do you think? What should Jupiter Broadcasting do about Star Trek Discovery?
I think you roll it into a more of a science fiction-y show. Maybe call it, I don't know,
Legend of the Stone Trek,
Science Bites, or something like that. Where,
God dang it, guys.
Where
you guys are a bunch of jackasses.
You talk about science fiction television.
You pick up that one nice community member, Heather.
Yeah, you guys are a bunch of. All right, so well, maybe the audience. Maybe I have a
I think
the
there needs to
be nothing. They don't want nothing. They'll just watch it and they don't want to hear us talk about it.
Well, there'll be people that will go back, man, you know, I miss this, and I miss this, and I miss this. And then when you say, all right, fine, we're going to bring it back, then no one shows up.
All right. You want something serious? Start a new show. Call it Beyond Horrible. And that way.
Are you saying Star Trek is beyond horrible?
No, I'm saying.
Oh, my God, you're fired.
Beyond could potentially be horrible.
Okay. All right.
But if it's good, then it's beyond horrible, and it's good.
Yeah. All right. Let us know. And ask your other random ass questions. Hashtag Ask Error.
So the revolution was successful.
Yes.
You guys did start something. Ah,
yes, we
Discord
did.
Is coming to the masses.
Oh my gosh!
You're welcome.
Guess who's taking the most of the heat for this?
However,
this
you. However, we're doing it Google style. We're releasing it as a beta product.
Yeah.
We are looking for feedback on what changes you guys would like to see.
But we are getting a beta test to see how people like it and try out the voice feature so we can at least get an idea if it's competitive.
We are also looking for someone to create a voice bridge to Mumble that
certain
community member might be willing to pay to have someone do.
That'd be big. So how do they get to it and what should they test?
You just need to go to discord.me/JupiterColony.
and that's going to be the name of the Discord group, is the Jupiter Colony. We launched the alpha to our patrons a couple of weeks ago to have them try it out, and we're going to roll it out further and just see how people like it, see what the response is, see what the uptake is, and see if we want to go further.
If you go there without the app installed, you will get the web app. If you go to discord.gg, there's a download link. If you are using Ubuntu, you can get a deb there. Most other distros have it in their repos.
Yeah, and I think the desktop app's the way to go.
Yeah.
You've also got mobile apps, so try it out. Let us know what you think. We'll try to remember to put a link in our show notes, too, so you don't have to remember the weird URL. And we'll see where it goes from here. We'll see where it goes, and maybe people will like it a lot, and maybe we'll decide it's not for us. But I think so far the response has been pretty positive.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of patrons on there already testing it out because they got early access.
That's
awesome. Right.
Thank you guys for doing that.
Yeah.
And let us know your thoughts too. You can also use that hashtag AskAir.